Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Luco. And this week, we are honored to have the voice of the Milwaukee Milkmen, Tom Wynn, join us this week. So, Tom, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, guys. My pleasure to be here.
Well, Tom, it's kind of exciting because I know last year the team was brand new. And so talk a little bit about how you got involved with the Milkmen and kind of your thoughts about the organization itself to this point.
Well, I've been broadcasting for the Milwaukee Wave indoor soccer team for many years, actually 30. Seems like it shouldn't be that long. But the team is owned by Rock Ventures, which is an organization that owns them. And so when the Milkmen was being formed, the management of Milkmen, Rock Ventures, talked to me and asked me if I'd be interested in doing some broadcasting for the baseball team. I said, sure. That's when my first professional sports broadcasting did involve baseball many years ago. So I said, yeah, I'd definitely be interested. I've always been interested in doing professional baseball in Milwaukee. Milwaukee is my hometown. And, of course, my goal was to possibly do some broadcasting for the Brewers, and despite many attempts to try to hook up with the Brewers, never could quite do it. But certainly this was the next best opportunity. So that was how I got on track to broadcast for the Milkmen. But it had been a while since I'd done broadcast. I actually broadcast a little bit in 2015 for the Rockford Mediators at the Frontier League. At the time, Rock Ventures was managing that team. They were actually leasing the team for a year to see if they were going to acquire it. It didn't work out that way, but they did bring me in to do broadcasting there for a couple of months. I guess they probably figured I could do that. But prior to that, the last time I had done any professional baseball broadcasting was back in the late 80s, early 90s. So it had been a while. Probably it was a good thing I broadcasted Rockford there for a couple of months to regain my baseball legs, so to speak. But, in the meantime, I pretty much had been doing professional soccer, mostly indoor soccer, with the Milwaukee Wave dating back to the 80s. And then for a while, this is before Rock Ventures acquired the Wave, we actually had an outdoor professional team. It was called the A-League, now the United Soccer League, Division II. Of professional outdoor soccer. So I broadcast for several years in the A-League, going back to the late 90s, early 2000s as well. But yeah, nothing professional baseball-wise really between 1991 and 2015. Of course, I was always interested in trying to see if I could line up a deal with somebody. But, I had a family with kids, so I wasn't really all that anxious to travel around all over just seeking a baseball broadcasting job. But obviously, I was keeping my ear to someone if anything came up. But fortunately, this worked out really well. As far as the Milkmen itself, I think it's just been a tremendous thing that we've developed here. Rock Ventures, led by Mike Zimmerman. Mike had a vision to build the stadium and bring in a professional team to that stadium in what is called the Rock Sports Complex in Franklin, Wisconsin. And, it took them several years to try to get together. Really tremendous persistence. Was running into, some obstacles, civic obstacles between Oak Creek, which is a town adjacent to Franklin, and Franklin itself. It was not something that happened overnight. It took a lot of negotiating. But eventually he was able to land the deal and, build a wonderful stadium. And in my opinion, probably the second best baseball stadium in the state itself. And, so being able to bring in the Milkmen to the American Association, which I think is the premier independent league in the United States. And I think it's been a great fit so far. Franklin Field, as it's called, the stadium where Milkmen play, is probably about, I'd say, maybe 15 miles as the crow flies between there and Miller Park. So it's not all that far away from where the Brewers play, but it's very well located in the section of town that it is. Very accessible to a lot of fans who live south of Milwaukee County. That's really on the southern border of Milwaukee County, where the ballpark is located. So, you know, when the Brewers aren't playing, but, you know, you're a baseball fan, you want to come catch a game, see some high-quality professional baseball, a nice stadium, spot for you right there. So far it's worked out. You know, obviously last year was kind of a baptism by fire as far as the team on the field, as you might expect for, you know, any expansion team in an established league. But I think under you know, the leadership of Mike Zimmerman and general manager Dan Kinsey, and now with Anthony Barone, as manager, Anthony, of course, was the third base coach last year. And he's been with Rock Ventures since 2015, since his days managing the Jamestown Jammers when they were Summit Collegiate team. I think those guys have really, done a great job of putting the team together. There's no question for this year, one of the things that really helped us was the American Association dispersal draft, or as I like to call it, the redistribution draft, because, you know, it's not like the teams that gave up these players aren't going to be back with us. Hopefully they're all going to be back with us, but obviously we did very well in that. You know, we picked up three key players from the Cleveland Railroaders, and we also picked up three key players from the Kansas City T-Bones, a couple of pretty good squads in the last year. And so, combined with a half dozen guys we brought back from last year, a couple of rookies and free agents, you know, looks like we've put together a pretty competitive team this year.
Now, being a Milwaukee guy, you had to spend many nights listening to the tones of Bob Uecker and to emulate any of his style in your broadcast, do you believe, or that you, or the other broadcasters when you were younger that you kind of looked up to and aspired to be like?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt, Kevin. I definitely incorporate some of Bob into my broadcasting. You know, Bob was certainly always a favorite of mine. I had the have the pleasure of knowing him for many years when I was covering the Brewers as a reporter for some of the radio stations and networks around the state. But yeah, there's no question about it. Beginning of the time, I believe it was the second year the Brewers were in Milwaukee in 1971. So that's going back to my elementary school days when I started listening to the Brewers and Bob. And so there's no question. I think I've incorporated a lot of stuff that he probably hasn't broadcasted. Obviously, nobody could do it like Bob. I mean, he's, you know, like his personality and his perspective and, you know, his humor, his insight, everything about him. There's nobody can even try to push that. But there's no question. I think he has a pretty good format how he delivers the broadcast and the technical descriptions of what goes on in field and that. So I think I've certainly tried to emulate that or incorporate that into my broadcasting style. And, I wish I could tell stories like he could while doing the play-by-play. Again, there's nobody could do it quite like Bob. But, there's no question. He certainly has been an influence in my baseball broadcasting.
I think what's been amazing with the guys that have worked, there are so many guys that have worked with Uecker that have gone on to get their own gigs with other teams. It's like a Milwaukee pipeline from working with Uecker on the radio to landing your own gig somewhere else. I mean, in Minnesota, we had Corey Provis and...
Right.
Chicago.
Let me see. Jim Powell.
Joe Block in Pittsburgh.
Yep, Joe Block as well. Yep. So no good about it. That's been a good stepping stone. If I were fortunate enough to team up with Bob, that would certainly be a great honor. That would be, you know, really have to try to uphold a great legacy set by his partners for sure.
Right. Yeah, it's funny you're talking about how close Miller Park is to Franklin Field. I noticed yesterday at the game that, like, the weather yesterday was affected by the lake. And I was sitting in the stands, and you could feel the cold breeze coming in from the lake effect. I almost felt like I was up in Duluth, Minnesota, where I used to watch many summer games. It was kind of unique. The warm wind and the cold wind were kind of battling for dominance yesterday.
Yeah, that's a good point, Kevin. typically, we're far enough off, I think I would say approximately 5 miles or so. Probably more like about 7 miles from the lake. Most of the time, half the time, we don't get lake effect out there. Usually, you got to be a little bit closer, a la Miller Park, which is probably only about 3 miles from where the lake is in downtown Milwaukee. But no doubt, the lake effect can spread over to Franklin Field. So, it definitely can be a factor. I agree with you. I think it definitely was yesterday. And, so, you know, it seems like it's, it can be very challenging, to play at Franklin Field. Typically, it tends to be windy. And again, some of that influenced by the lake, no doubt. And then, you know, especially if you're playing during the day with the windy conditions, we definitely have a bit of glare there at times that makes it challenging for the fielders. So, it can be kind of a tough, place to play. It takes a little while, I think, as a player to kind of adjust to it a little bit. I would say for the most part, you know, somebody was asking me last year, is it a hitter's park? Is it a pitcher's park? Well, with no wind, I would say it's a pretty good hitter's park. You know, the dimensions are fair. You're 330 down the line, maybe 405 to center field. So it's a pretty good hitter's park when there's not significant wind. Sometimes we do get the winds blowing out, both to right and left field. Most of the time when the wind is blowing, it tends to blow in from left center. So, in those days, of course, then you would classify it more as a pitcher's park. So I guess it's varied away depending on which way the wind is going. But generally speaking, when there's not much wind, I think it's a pretty good place to hit. You got a good background. The lighting is great. So it seems like it's, a pretty good park to take your hacks at least half the time.
Yeah, ball seemed to be flying out pretty good on Saturday, I noticed. But yeah, yesterday with that breeze, that just seemed like anything that was in the air was, for the most part, dying.
You know, Tom, I'd like to ask you a little bit about kind of your indoor soccer experience. You know, I think a lot of fans get used to watching outdoor soccer, and you know, it's a long pass, and so there's not as much, you know, a lot of calling of the game, so to speak. You know, it's not like hockey in that sense where, you know, there's 20 things going on around you at the time. But in indoor soccer, that's a little different. So is it a transition to come from a more frantic kind of sport like indoor soccer to baseball?
Yeah, I think it is. I think the advantage to my head, Rob, is that, you know, I started off primarily as a baseball broadcaster, you know, baseball, basketball, football. And of course, you know, if you're accustomed to baseball, you know what it's like to try to fill time and try to keep the broadcast moving, right, between some of the dead periods of the game. Indoor soccer, as you said, very analogous to hockey. You're moving up and down most of the time. There's a few more stops to play in indoor soccer compared to what you would have in hockey, but the action pretty much, you know, takes care of itself. So you don't really have to worry about filling a lot of time when you're broadcasting in indoor soccer or hockey. And by the same token, you don't have as much time to, do any quick lookups information-wise. So right, those games go out because, you know, you look down for a couple seconds and whoosh, something else is happening. Whereas baseball, obviously, you get time to do that. A lot of it, I think, is just sort of, maybe like kind of a psychological approach. You know, baseball, you've got to get it sort of a relaxed mode, right? You can't be too hyper about it. Kind of maybe got to dial down the emotion and intensity a little bit throughout the course of the game. Obviously, the exciting moments, right, are there for you. But for the most part, you just have to stay more even keel when you're doing the baseball broadcast and just kind of get in a rhythm and let it flow that way, not really trying to force it too much. In indoor soccer, it's much more intense as far as when stuff is happening. And so you can probably wind yourself up a little bit more, depending what's going on. But I would think it'd be, if you were a hockey or an indoor soccer broadcaster to begin with, it would be maybe kind of a tough transition to do baseball or outdoor soccer, you know, for the first few times. Take a little bit maybe to kind of adjust to it. But again, like I said, my case, you know, I started off as a baseball broadcaster. And so I think the transition for me, even though I've been doing indoor soccer and outdoor soccer for that matter for the bulk of my broadcasting career, you know, once I got back into it, I was able to adjust okay. You know, kind of like you say, ice skating, you know, once you learn how to do it, you can always go back and do it sometimes, maybe not as effectively.
Yeah, you don't see a ton of spillover between baseball and hockey broadcasting. I know Gary Thorne does a very good job of both hockey and baseball, but it does seem like on the major league level or major four sports, you're either going to do hockey or baseball. You generally don't do both. That's why I thought it was pretty entertaining one summer when Doc Emrick popped into a Pittsburgh Pirates game, and they let Doc do an inning, and it was just kind of weird because you just, you know, you start associating the voice with the sport that they do, and it just seems like an awkward crossover.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, no doubt. Although Doc, you know, I'm sure, he could probably do it, right? If you just give him a few innings to warm up, he could probably step in there and do it. But, I think you're right, Kevin. There isn't too much crossover that I can pick up between baseball and hockey. It's more baseball, basketball, that kind of thing. Maybe the seasons complement each other more. You know, hockey is a little longer season, generally speaking, than basketball, certainly than college basketball. And that seems to be, you know, you see a lot of NFL guys who are doing college basketball, for instance, in the off season. But very few, if any, as you said, that do professional hockey during the baseball off season.
I'm just trying to imagine I'm Vin Scully calling a hockey game, and I just can't. And
yeah,
that's
weird. That would be weird.
That would be something. That'd be something. I, you know, again, I wouldn't put it past that. He's one of the great broadcasting, sports broadcasting geniuses of that time. But I'm sure he could do it, and it'd be pretty entertaining.
Well, Tom, let's talk a little bit about this season here. First of all, you know, when it was announced we were actually going to get underway, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, I was very excited, especially because Milwaukee was one of the teams involved. Certainly felt bad for the teams that, you know, are not able to participate this year, but certainly feel blessed that Milwaukee were one of the teams that were chosen to participate, and as a hub city, no less. As it turned out, Chicago was able to get back into their ballpark at Impact Field. So, we didn't have to worry about hosting that. I thought it was great, certainly. I think it's great for the American Association to be able to, I don't know if I want to say make a statement, but the fact that we're playing, I think hopefully sends a good, positive message out to everybody that we just don't have to close up our tents because of the pandemic. Yeah, again, you've got to take precautions. You got to be smart. You got to try to make sure social distancing and masking and, you know, all the other components that have now become part of our society are integrated into the baseball experience. But, I like the idea that, we're going forward and doing this. I give, Commissioner Schaub and certainly all the owners of the teams, and especially the owners of the Winnipeg Gold Bears and the St. Paul Saints, who basically are looking at seasons without any true home games in their home ballparks. The fact that they are going forward to participate in this to really, give the league a bigger, expanded season per se. So otherwise, we might only have four teams playing, but at least we have six, and especially with the Saints, the defending champs. So, I give those teams all the credit as well. I think it's just been tremendous. Hopefully, again, it's going to, send a good message to, other organized sports leagues going forward for the rest of this year and into the foreseeable future that it can be done. Everybody has to work a little harder and be aware of, the surrounding environment, but it can be done, and you know, knock on wood, hopefully this could turn out to be still a great team.
Well, let me ask you about that for a minute, because has the enthusiasm in Milwaukee been great in the sense that, you know, here's this team that is playing baseball and you have an opportunity to go out to see it? Are the fans embracing that idea? Is the community embracing that?
Well, from what I can tell, Rob, yes. Again, you know, I'm sure there are fans who are haven't come out to the game, some of the games so far, probably wait to see and want to see how it turned out. But for the fans who've been out there, and again, we're probably averaging about 1,000, at least 1,000 a game. I'm not sure what our official average is, but you know, we've had some pretty good crowds. Our capacity, our social distance capacity, is about 1,500 or 1,600. Typically, the park would seat about 4,500, so we're at about 1/3 of that. But I think you know, for the fans who are out there, very enthusiastic. You know, still created a pretty good atmosphere for the games. We're fortunate in our facility, you can really spread out quite a bit. So there's not only just the seating area, but, you know, we have a big plaza and lawn seating going in the outfield area as well. So that's definitely an advantage for the fans as well, with some bleachers as well in right field. And so I think it's been a pretty good atmosphere so far, and I think the fans have enjoyed it. And we run the game as far as the game production. We've been doing it just like we would if we had, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 there. And so I think, again, I've seen a lot of, you know, a lot of commentary from people, you know, really, really giving us support. And, you know, if they haven't been coming to the games, they've certainly been backing us. And again, I think it's just great. And again, I'm very happy that, you know, we're one of the teams in the league that's been able to do it. Once we actually began the season, it seemed like just regular baseball, except maybe the crowds weren't as big. But as far as the, you know, the normal feeling once the game gets going and once the, you know, once you're actually playing, it seems really no different than you know, what it was last year, for instance.
And you've got two of the best guys in the business when it comes to on-field MCs to entertain the fans with Jim Rinelli and Van McNeil.
Oh, no question about it, Kevin. Those guys are tremendous. Van McNeil, Van the Man, as we've known for many years, he's been the public address announcer and impresario at the Milwaukee Wave games. Van's one of the best I've ever seen. You know, great energy, great creativity. You know, just a great wit. He's a great entertainer and a great public broadcaster. Jim Rinelli, who joined Van last year, starting with the Duncan season last year. He's a former DJ in town who actually is a retired firefighter from the Milwaukee Fire Department. So Jim, you know, was also doing some music and disc jockey stuff during his days and shortly thereafter he retired as a firefighter. And he's also a big baseball guy. Jim, very devoted baseball fan. He has a son who plays. Jim's also active in coaching with his son and his son's team. And you know, Jim's like me. He knows everything about the Brewers and probably everything that's happened, you know, Major League Baseball since the 1970s. And so this fits in perfectly. Jim fits the milkman perfectly. And he and Van, I think you can tell, have a real great chemistry when they're out there. Just great presence between them. And I think the fans really enjoy it. I think the milkman organization, you know, has done a great job to create a fun atmosphere at the games. And you know, similar right to a lot of teams in the American Association. Yes, baseball is the focus. That's why we're there. But, you know, it should be about good entertainment for the fans and, you know, to be a fun night out at the ballpark, even if you're not the greatest baseball fan. You can come there and have a good time, have some great food, enjoy the auxiliary entertainment, the contest between the innings, you know, some of the other shit that goes on. In our case, you know, Bovine, the mascot, we've got something for everybody. And again, I think that echoes a lot of the other teams in the American Association. You go to an American Association game, I think you're going to have fun whether you're baseball fan.
I'd agree with you there.
You have to get those $5 chocolate shakes either.
I don't know, I almost can't watch that when we have those milkshakes that you got these, because I'm telling you, my brain would just freeze after one second. But to watch those guys try to slide that down is just unbelievable.
Yeah, Jack Michaels from Fargo's a really big fan of them. I introduced him to those last season when I was out there.
Well, you know, Jack is a legend. I mean, you'd have to say he certainly is one of the legendary broadcasters of the American Association. You know, I don't know, maybe when Fargo comes to town, maybe Jack and I can get together for a little celebrity milkshake chug, although...
there you go.
I'm gonna make sure that I've got a lot less in my cup of Jack.
I think Jack would be game for that.
It's one of the few things he can have that he doesn't have to worry about allergies with there. So that's always a good thing for him there. So you know, Tom, you talked about this a little bit, and so I want to come back to the dispersal draft for a moment, because I thought no team came off better out of that draft than Milwaukee. I mean, they were an okay team, in my opinion, before that draft and became a top contender after that. Talk a little bit about, as the broadcaster, as you're looking at names like Zach Narrier and Dylan Tice and Dylan Baker and guys like that joining the team, you got to be excited about that, I'd figure.
Yeah, no question. Gave us, certainly we didn't have a lot of league veteran presence last year. You know, we had veterans from affiliated ball that came in. But, you know, I think there's a bit of an adjustment. When you come to the American Association or independent ball in general, you know, you've got to make a little adjustment, not just in the playing, but probably, you know, just the psychological aspect of it, whatever, compared to affiliated ball. And so to have veterans who have been there and done that in this league, again, we did not have a lot of American Association veterans on the team last year. This year, obviously, especially through this dispersal draft, you know, we picked up, you know, six solid veterans who know what it's like to be in this league, know the level of competition, you know, the mental approach that you've got to have, and you know, practically all-stars, the guys that we picked up, Chase Simpson and Zach Narrier and Dylan Tice. I mean, there's three all-stars right there. Then we also had Logan Trowbridge from Claiborne, Mason Davis from Kansas City, and Dylan Baker as well. That's, you know, one quarter of the team right there, and almost half your starting lineup. So instant impact right away, as you said, Rob. I think that definitely put us in the realms of being contenders. Although obviously everybody else in the league certainly bulked up from the draft as well. So you know, I'm not sure it's going to stamp us as a favorite to win the league, but definitely it, you know, makes us a much more competitive team. And you know, I think the fact we've got off to a fairly good start here, 5-3 as of this broadcast, probably reaffirms the you know, the confidence the team is building itself. And the thing is, we've done the last week without Chase Simpson. Chase came down with an inner ear infection early last week, and he missed the final five games of the week. And you're talking about a guy who arguably, if not for the season Keon Barnum had last year for the Chicago Dogs, I think Chase very well could have been the league MVP. So that was a tremendous acquisition for him. And, you know, unfortunately, he's been sidelined with this inner ear thing. I don't know what the timetable is for his return. Hopefully he gets back in the lineup soon. You know, when you've got a corner infielder, switch hitter with power, guy like Chase, I mean, that's indispensable. You're just not going to be able to place those guys very easily. So hopefully we get him back and he can get back into his form, and that would definitely be a huge boost for our team, no question about it.
you know, I was talking to Michael Zimmerman after the game on Friday night, and we were talking about all the guys that have come in through the dispersal draft. This is a golden opportunity for the Milkmen to show these players how good of a place Milwaukee is to play. And maybe they got to go back to their original team, but if they got a friend that's looking for a team to play for, they're going to say, hey, you know, I had a good experience in Milwaukee last year. You should check them out. I think this is a great opportunity for the Milkmen to become one of those destination franchise for players looking for a team to play for.
Yes, I think that's an excellent point, Kevin. Granted, as visiting players who came through last year, you know, I think they were able to try, you know, take a look at the facility and stuff, and hopefully were impressed. But now being able to spend time on a regular basis, especially the guys right that we picked up in that draft, they can really, you know, see the opportunity up close and personal. You know, when we talk about the stadium, of course, that's one aspect of the Milton operation. The other thing is the whole complex there, the whole ballpark commons, as it's called, that Mike Zimmerman's building. And one of the things, and I'm sure you probably noticed it, was there was a huge indoor field house that they are constructing adjacent to the Milton Rock Ventures corporate office. That will be the largest indoor athletic facility in the state of Wisconsin. Even bigger, I believe, than the Badgers have up in Madison for their football team. So it's also going to provide opportunities for people who play with the Milkmen to be able to have a year-round workout facility, because it's going to be designed for baseball as well as soccer, as well as football, as well as lacrosse, you know, anything you can put in there. But it's of the size that you can almost have a full hitting half field, if you will, and the roof is certainly high enough, to almost be at the height of a permanent domed stadium, let's say. So I think that's going to also help in the selling point, in the recruiting. And as you guys know, you know, independent baseball, a lot of it is all about recruiting the players, and so I think that's a good, you know, that's going to be certainly a good development for us as well.
Well, the umbrella bar won me over on Friday, so
that is definitely a nice addition as well, right in the middle of the complex there.
it's a great view if you want to watch all the other games going on the adjacent baseball fields. It's a really nice view of everything.
Yeah, it sure is. Again, it is the mecca of baseball in southeastern Wisconsin. I hesitate to say probably in all Wisconsin. I can't think of another baseball complex where you've got four full-size fields and then two youth fields, little league-type fields. And then, as you said, you can actually watch at least two of the fields and the full-size fields from that umbrella bar. You can probably look over at one of the youth fields as well. But I can't think of a similar setup anywhere that I've seen in the state. And it's a great baseball facility and traffic spot. And I think that's the other thing that, you know, again, when Mike conceived of building Franklin Field and bringing in the team to play there, you know, a lot of what he was thinking was based on the fact that this complex is where a lot of people were coming for youth baseball tournaments and other kinds of baseball activity here in southeastern Wisconsin. So it's a natural drawing thing. And then, you know, on top of it, what we did this year is we converted the left field parking lot behind the left field fence of Franklin Field. We took the video board, the backside of the video board, and turned that into a drive-in theater. And, you know, some of that was because, you know, the delay at the start of the season. But the other thing is, in the Milwaukee area, we really do not have a geographically close drive-in theater. I think the closest one might be about 30 or 35 miles away. Huh. And so I think it was probably a bit of pent-up demand for a drive-in theater somewhere in the Milwaukee area. And so we were able to convert that, the Milky Way Drive-In, as we call it. And that's been a hit so far as well. So definitely more than just baseball out at the Rock Complex. During the wintertime, of course, it's snowboarding, and winter sports area, cross-country skiing, that kind of stuff. You guys probably notice we've got a big hill right in the middle of it that we refer to as Mount Rock, and that's the top of the ski boarding hill, and tubing, inner tubing as well, going down the hill. We actually have a operational lift, I think, during the winter, and you know, one of these days I envision putting a statue of Bovine on top of that.
There you go.
You know, with the idea people would make a pilgrimage to come out to Mount Rock and, you know, go up and see Bovine and maybe get a coupon for 10% off at the Milkman merchandise store.
The Milkman's sacred cow. How about that right there?
Right.
How about that? you know, Tom, I got to tell you that when the season began, I thought the interesting dynamic of the season is the hub city, you know, the team that you're going to be playing 24 games. And Chicago, both Kevin and I thought, was kind of the class of the league. And I thought this was the reason that the Milwaukee would probably miss the playoffs. But, boy, there seemed to be no intimidation factor from the Milkmen, that they took on the Chicago Dogs and gave them, you know, everything that they could take.
Well, we were fortunate to get off to a good start and maybe, you know, caught the Dogs at the right time, when they were just trying to, you know, get their legs going for the season. That was a tremendous 5-game stretch for them when we beat them, 4 out of the 5 games. Again, we got to play them 19 more times and it's going to be a battle. As you said, Rob, they are a very well constructed team, a lot of veteran talent. Excellent pitching on that team, pretty good bullpen. But if you've grown up in Milwaukee or you've been in Milwaukee or played for a team in Milwaukee, you always relish the rivalry and the challenge of playing teams from Chicago. There's no question. You know, we played 24 times. As far as our fans are concerned, you know, they wouldn't mind if we played 60 times this year. That's not to say, you know, that might not work out all that well for us record-wise, but you can already sense that it's going to be a good rivalry, as most Milwaukee-Chicago rivalries are. And, you know, with the ballparks barely an hour apart on the freeway from each other, tremendous opportunity for fans to travel either way to go see the games. And so, I think that's going to be, certainly a key part of the season, right? How we do in those 24 games against, Chicago. And, you know, of course, you look at the other matchups with Winnipeg and Fargo, and then also with Sioux Falls and St. Paul. Whoever comes out on those, you know, those are your three, probably your three top playoff contenders, and then you got to, you know, take the top two out of those three to see who's going to play for the championship.
I guess I should have brought this up at some point, but I'm one of those few people from Minnesota that's actually a Brewers fan, too, and I witnessed Cubs versus Brewers at Miller Park, and it's, I'd say it gives the Yankees and the Red Sox a run for its money as far as being a hot rivalry on and off the field. So, if the Milkmen and Dogs can become anything like that, I think that's just going to be really, really good for both franchises.
Oh, no doubt. And you know, it's certainly been proven in any of the other leagues where you've got Milwaukee and Chicago both playing each other. The NASL, we have a rival in Chicago called the Mustangs. They actually dropped down a division, so we don't play them anymore. But that was obviously, our key rival, maybe beside the Baltimore Blast when they were in the NASL. In the American Hockey League, you know, you've got the Milwaukee Admirals, Chicago Wolves, of course, you know, Brewers, Cubs, White Sox, Brewers, Packers, Bears, if you want to extend it that far, and then Bulls and Bucks. But, I mean, there's no question about it. So you've got Milwaukee and Chicago. That always perks up the interest of the fans and media, no question about it. And Milwaukee, you know, has been – the Milwaukee and Wisconsin teams have been on a good roll against the Chicago teams in the last 3 years. I'm sure the war room's going to turn here sometime, but right now we've got some pretty good success here with our Milwaukee teams against Chicago. So, I'm hoping it carries over to the rest of the season when we're battling the Dogs, but they've got a very good team. We're going to have our work cut out for them against those guys, and, hopefully we can understand our positive role here until next time we play them, which is coming up on July 21st.
This isn't going to win me any points with anybody listening from Chicago, but give me a brat with sauerkraut and stadium sauce over a Chicago dog any day of the week.
Well, I got to tell you, though, Kevin, that Wiener Wednesday that I am down in Chicago has got to be one of the baseball promotions of all time. I'm not aware. Maybe you guys can tell me. I've never heard of anybody who sponsored, hosted an all-you-could-eat hot dog situation in their home ballpark. I mean, you might get a free hot dog or two or something like that, but my goodness, if you go to Impact Field and literally all the hot dogs you can eat for your paid admission, I mean, that's one of the greatest deals, not only in baseball, but in the history of professional sports.
Oh, I remember in Minnesota when they, even that Dollar Dog Night, when they introduced that in the Metrodome in like 2002, the hot dogs were gone by the third inning. I mean, people were burping up on Hormel for the next week, but...
Yeah, you think
I do recall the stories of the Dollar Dogs at the Metrodome. Yes, yes.
You would think the dogs would have like Joey Chestnut Night there and see if they could have like a dog-eating contest or something to go along with that. That'd be really something.
Unless Joey is, really holding out for big money. I mean,
yeah, it's going
to
be.
It's not cheap to bring him in, but, boy, you're right. That'd be a natural, right? Joey Chestnut at the dogs game, for sure.
Tom, I got to ask you, because you have some of my favorite longtime American Association guys there. Ryan Kuschmal is one of the funniest guys I think I've ever been around. Logan Trowbridge is just an amazing guy to me in terms of not only just a smart young kid, but can play just about any place you place him at there. So, got to be quite a group of characters. So who's a guy who's really kind of standing out of you just like to tell stories about while you're broadcasting games?
I talked a little bit with Mason Davis preseason. He's an interesting guy. He went to school at the Citadel. So, he's got that military background, so to speak. I asked Mason, I said, so, since you've been a professional ball player, professional ball players really don't like to get up too early in the morning, but how about you, Mason? So, yeah, sticking to that early schedule, once he got accustomed to that during his college days. He's apparently up and early. He didn't tell me exactly what time. I'm not sure if he's getting up at 5 a.m. every morning like he probably was at the Citadel, but, I'm pretty sure Mason is, he's going to be up and around for sure by 7:30, 8 o'clock, something like that. One of the guys, of course, that I, really enjoy having on the team is our own vocal guy, Adam Walker. He's a Milwaukee guy and, of course, played college ball at Jacksonville University. But, Adam's been around professional baseball now for a number of years. Just a very engaging guy, great guy to talk to, kind of soft-spoken, but, got a great personality, great sense of humor. I did catch him one time, in fact, he went to Jacksonville, I don't know if you guys may know this or may not, but one of the greatest basketball players of all time named Artis Gilmore played for the Jacksonville Dolphins. And I asked Adam one time, I said, if I asked you who the most famous athlete in Jacksonville University history was, it would just say, it's that big guy from the basketball team. give me some initials. And I told him, and eventually he figured out his Artis Gilmore, but it was just kind of funny. But that's when I realized, again, the difference between my age difference and the guys who were playing. I mean, most of the time, more than twice the age of these guys who are out there playing. So what I think of in terms of sports history, not even a blip on the radar for most of these guys. They'd be more comparable to my son. I've got a son who's 27, so that's probably more the perspective that these guys are going to have. But Adam's a great guy. Chris Conley, who I got to know a bit last year, the Canisius guy, he's got a good personality, and hoping that Chris can get on track a bit, because he was a big spot for Anthony Barone when Anthony was managing the Jammers collegiate team a couple of years ago. That's probably how we got the connection to, you know, bring Chris on with us last year. And he's only got one American Association home run in his one-plus seasons, but it was a bomb last year at CHS Field in St. Paul. And I'm telling you, that ball is the second game of the year, and he hit a ball that had to go at least 450. And I still, you know, refer to that one as a ball that nobody found in St. Paul because he launched that thing. I don't know what the longest homers are in St. Paul history in CHS Field, but that's definitely got to be one of them for sure. I haven't gotten to all the, too many of the new guys. Talk a little bit with David Washington, our first baseman, San Diego guy. I told him, he's probably a soccer fan, but I don't hold that against him. They're one of the rivals of the wave, although we don't play them that much. He got a good kick out of that. Told me that he has not been to the sports arena in San Diego since he was a youngster, since like his high school days. But obviously he's a sports fan, San Diego fan, and haven't really had a chance to talk to too much of the other guys. You know, again, the circumstances this year kind of preempt a lot of one-on-one or, being able to hang around the clubhouse and talk to these guys a little bit and stuff like that. So I haven't had quite the opportunity that perhaps I did last year to talk with some of these guys. But, for the most part, they all seem like good guys and seem like obviously they've come together pretty quickly with the Milkman. Again, that's credit to Anthony, getting the team together here. And again, hopefully we can stay healthy and keep it going for the rest of the season.
Well, I do have to say, because I got to kind of get off baseball here for just a moment, because my wife is from Gillette, Wisconsin, which is just outside of Green Bay. And when she saw a 920 area code for you, she said, "So is this Tom a Packer guy?" And so I have to check with you now, Tom. So if you're not a Packer guy, we may have to cut off this whole segment. I'm just got to say that part.
Oh, no, that's, that's in the blood here, right? If you grow up in Wisconsin, of course, again, I go back to the days when the Packers used to play three home games in Milwaukee as part of their home schedule at Old Colony Stadium. But believe it or not, I'm old enough, guys, to remember the glory days of the Packers in the 60s. I was 8 years old when the Packers beat the Cleveland Browns for the 1965 NFL Championship a year before the Super Bowl began, and I can still remember the first two Super Bowls. Not as much as I can remember a few years ago, but I can still remember the excitement anticipating watching the games. It is kind of weird, though. I've gone back online to review the tapes, and boy, I'll tell you, some of the stuff that happened in those games I don't remember as clearly as I used to, but yes, indeed, I was around when that happened, and you can imagine with the Packers at the time winning three consecutive league championships in the first two Super Bowls, they were undoubtedly, the most iconic professional team that you could imagine. So everybody around here is Packers, except for, a handful of people who still support that team in the South.
Whatever their name was, something like that.
Yeah.
I was 7 years old when the last time the Vikings were in the Super Bowl. And I think I can barely remember. You get those fuzzy childhood memories that are inexplicable. I think I can remember the game being on TV in the house and just the look on my dad's face watching the Vikings go down in flames for the fourth time in a Super Bowl. And
that was against the Raiders, wasn't it?
Yes. Stabler, Nikoff, and those boys.
Willie Brown had the interception against Fran Tarkenton. Took it back to the touchdown. I remember watching that in college. In later years for the Vikings, and the Vikings, almost as big a rival, I'm sure, as you get to the central western part of the state, there's no question the Vikings are probably a bigger rival these days than the Bears are before the Packers. But I did follow the Vikings, kind of intently when Brett Favre was playing for them a couple of years, And I guess the question is, Kevin, why did Favre throw that ball in the Superdome? Why did
that be one of the top 10 Minnesota unanswered questions?
Oh, I mean, Longwell had the range. All they could have do, you know, just basically pick up a couple yards, right, and hang on to the ball and let Longwell do his thing, and the Vikes could have gone to another Super Bowl. But, yeah, we'll never know now.
Yeah, I'm not really a football guy, but, yeah, I do remember this from people that do follow me are still questioning that. My latest chance at football, I gave one more chance, was when the Vikings met the Eagles in the NFC Championship game. My poor dad, I just want him to see the Vikings win the Super Bowl once before he dies. And I'm sitting there at the house. I decided to watch the game with my brother and my dad. And it got to halftime, and I think it was like a gazillion to 7. I don't remember what the score was. I turned to my brother and I said, "Well, I've seen this script too many times. I'm out of here." I haven't watched the game since.
Well, he used up all their magic the previous week, right? When Case Keenum threw that touchdown pass, the Diggs. That I think they used up all the magic, but now who knows? You know, maybe one of these years it'll happen.
You know, the great thing I have to tell you, Tom, is that my niece's husband, Chris, a huge Packer fan too, and what I find so enjoyable about Packer fans is. The number one thing they could tell you about is all the great things that Packers have done during the time that they've watched playing them. The second thing they could tell you all about is all the things that have gone on in Viking history that have been bad. So that Favre interception is a personal highlight for many Packer fans, I'm sure.
That's pretty good.
Well, Tom, you know, we want to thank you so much for joining us. But before we head out today, we always give an opportunity for our guests to give us a final thought for this week. So whatever you'd like to talk about, we'd love to hear it today.
Well, I think that it's been a great start to the season for the American Association. And like I said, guys, I think it's just tremendous that the league is playing. You know, we should feel very blessed and fortunate, I guess, that we're part of it in some way. And, you know, just hoping that the rest of the summer can go okay and that, you know, just try to keep a positive outlook. I know a lot of the past 4 months have been kind of depressing at times and stuff, but, you know, let's just try to keep our heads up and, you know, enjoy each day as we have it. And, you know, hopefully we're trending positively. And, you know, looking forward to a better second half of the year here.
That's awesome.
Patronize your local frozen custard, please.
Fantastic. Tom, thanks for joining us this week.
All right, thank you, guys. Take care.
Well, it was awesome having Tom on the show, but Kevin and I want to talk a little bit about stuff going on around the American Association. And where we want to begin at is to talk about the Minor League Sports Report and This Week in the Association Player and Pitcher of the Week for Week 1. So first of all, let's talk about Dane McTomshay, chosen out of the Sioux Falls Canaries. A lot of good guys came up with big weeks, but he separated himself, Kevin.
Right. I guess the thing that stood out to me is 13 runs batted in already in the young season. He's taken well to the friendly confines of the Burt Beach and Sioux Falls.
Well, you know, it's not like he's been facing some slouchy pitching either. You know, he had Winnipeg and St. Paul, which we believed had the two best starting rotations heading into the season here. And so, you know, he's putting up some numbers against some teams that, you know, have some guys that are ready to stop you.
Right. And, you know, you look at the lineup for Sioux Falls here, you know, you're thinking of the Jabari Henrys and Andrew Healy's and guys, Alay Loggles. So Tomshay kind of like slipped under the radar there, but he's second in the team in batting average at 368. But I mean, heck, Alay Loggles ahead of you, so it's not like you're going to be pretty hard pressed to have the highest average on that team. So yeah, I'm kind of curious. You stepped up too, but you know, you look at a guy like Clint Coulter. Coulter's off to a slow start. Casey Hunt is off to a slow start. my card has been average, but boy, Tasha's been everything that Mike Meyer could ask for.
You know, I always think about your power rankings and how you are evaluating teams not only based upon record and how well they've been doing, but who those victories have been at during a week. And, you know, I think about that big 12-11 victory over St. Paul that gave them the sweep. You know, he saved his best game of the season for when they needed all five RBI for that day. You know, 12-11 game. If he has one less run, they might not win that game. So, you know, he's had big moments for the team already this season that I think kind of separated him out from the other guys in the league.
Right. Yeah, I mean, how many times have we seen it where, like, you're winning, like, 10-1 and then a guy knocks in, like, four more runs where it's like it's not, yeah, you did it, but it wasn't exactly a pressure-filled situation. Yeah, then he fouls it up the next night with three more runs batted against Winnipeg. So those two games alone, 6-for-10 with 7 RBIs.
Had
a pretty good week those 2 days.
Absolutely, against Winnipeg, which at that point was just red hot. And here's a guy who comes in and kind of, you know, cooled them off right away. Speaking of Winnipeg, though, Kevin, Mitch Lamson, I think this is kind of becoming a broken record here. Mitch Lamson as the pitcher of the week after going 2-0 with a 0.75 ERA in his two starts. I mean, I don't really know what else to say about Mitch at this point, but maybe you have some great words, I guess, to add.
Yeah, just listen to one of our archives from last year and into this year. I might just have to just start naming the Mitch Lamson Award.
Seriously?
I mean, 12 innings pitched, 10 strikeouts, only 3 walks, only 8 hits. Two wins in both starts. What else can you ask for?
Absolutely.
Like he had 13 wins last year. Maybe he'll get 13 again in these 60 games.
That would really be something.
Find a way to give him enough starts.
Well, with those extra days off each week, that one day off each week, he may pull that out. So that you just never know.
Totally get off the topic. I wonder if you're looking at what the managers are thinking as far as their pitching rotation, if they're using that off day to try to line the rotation up for the week where if you got a hot starter, you're getting him as many starts as possible.
Well, who was it we talked to? One of the managers was saying that you're trying to make sure that, you know, the other guys in the rotation, you may skip or have them go every seventh day or something like that, but you're trying to get your number one guy to go as many times as you can a season. And with 60 games and basically 70 days, you could get your number one starter in there 14, 15 times if by that schedule.
Right. It's entirely possible, but, yeah, I guess it's what you're doing. What's the value as a manager if you're hoping to keep all the pitchers happy and not keep shutting out your number one guy? So, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out as the year goes on.
Mitch has a shot at those 13 victories. Well, Kevin, let's talk a little bit about what's happened here in the first 10 days. Let's first of all talk about this, because you and I discussed before the season began, it was a point that you made about we were going to know if somebody was kind of eliminated. If somebody came out a week, you know, this Monday we were here at 1-8 or 2-7, that they could potentially be already out. Or if somebody got out to an 8-1 start, they were already kind of a playoff team at that point. Nobody comes away with that start, so we're seeing good parity. Your thoughts on just the overall performance of the league at this point?
Well, I think we have. You know, we were talking about how every team can the dispersal draft and the restrictions lifted on the number of veterans you can have, everyone can shot out a really good team. And, we've seen parity throughout the league where you look at Fargo in last place at 3-6, but they're 2.5 games out of the playoff spot. Well, if you, okay, so that's 51 games left. If you would have told me last year, you know, your team's 2.5 games out of the playoff spot with 51 games to go, yeah, you take that and run with it and see what you can do. So, no, there hasn't been that one disastrous start yet, and nobody's gone reeled off a 9-0 or 9-1 or 8-2. So, you know, you're one good week from making a pretty good climb in the standings. So, kind of keeps it interesting.
Well, let's begin with Fargo. They're at the bottom of the American Association standings at 3-6. The one takeaway I had for them personally, Kevin, was that this is a team that can do some things. It hasn't looked for me like they put all the things together yet. It's just like, you know, a bad hit against Winnipeg or, you know, Mitch Lamson you're facing twice or something. It looks like it's just a team that just needs, you know, when one thing happens, it's going to steamroll for them.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. This is a team, I think, if when it gets on a roll, not if, but when, they're going to be a dangerous club, and you don't want to be the team that they wake up against. So there's just too much talent on that team to stay down for too long.
I think we saw that in the third game of the season against Winnipeg, a 9-run third inning against Kevin McGovern, who struggled a little bit early on, but that's still Kevin McGovern, and you just don't throw 9 runs up on Kevin McGovern. So this team has all of the things in place to be able to get it all together. As you looked at the team, was there something that you personally were seeing that kind of stood out that you're like, wow, this guy, you know, you expected more out of, or something that you're just, this is where the season turns if this guy or if this particular thing happens?
Well, I think you look at Coryell Prime. I think you need to have him and Leah Balkin knocking the ball at the ballpark. Right now, looking at Fargo stats, it looks like as a team they've only had 2 home runs.
Pretty surprising.
I don't expect that from a Fargo team. Usually they have their pretty fair share of soldiers. So yeah, I think that's a part of the game that they could get going is putting the quick runs up. I guess 3 home runs now that I look at it.
Yeah, you're actually bringing up something I hadn't even considered. No triples, only 3 home runs. I mean, when you're not getting extra base hits, those are the kind of things that, you know, 3 hits in an inning, you could have nothing. If all of them are singles, you can come away with nothing, but 1 double and you have 2 runs in.
Right, it's the Earl Weaver strategy, play from the 3-run homer. I feel I won Earl a few games, so must be on to something there, isn't he?
Yeah, I would say. So it'll be interesting to see what Chris Coast does to change that, because 2 stolen bases is all this team has, 3 home runs. Interesting to see if he tries to do some more things with the team to, you know, to try to get a little more run production going on right now. So. Chicago Dogs, let's talk a little bit about another team that's, you know, for me personally, I had Chicago and Fargo as the playoff teams, and they're in 5th and 6th place, so I'm looking pretty bad at this point here. Chicago faced a very tough Milwaukee team to start the season out there, struggled scoring runs, then came away with 2 victories this weekend in Fargo. Is that riding the ship, do you think, with those 2 victories in Fargo?
Well, I wouldn't say it's bad momentum, and as people that have followed the American Association long enough know, it's not easy to win games in Fargo, and if you come out there with a series win, you got to feel pretty good about yourself.
Well, they've shown an excellent job pitching so far this season. The team is currently ranked 2nd in the American Association with a 3.80 ERA, but boy, the hitting has just not come around for this team. And I worry that this could potentially be 2018 all over again there for manager Butch Hobson.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. I'm looking at their stats right now. They are only hitting .228 as a team, but they've got 9 home runs in 8 games. And boy, if you start giving them guys on base for those guys to knock the ball over the fence for, it once again becomes a dangerous lineup.
The question out of that, I guess, Kevin, is maybe the belief that we had about this lineup kind of a mirage, or is it just, is Milwaukee's pitching staff just that good?
Well, it could be Milwaukee's pitching is that good, or it could be guys, good SSL starters on Chicago, too. I look at their stats, and Tony Roselli, Victor Rocha, and Casey Hobson are all hit it under 200, and you know that's not going to stay like that. So you get those guys hot, and the guys that have been doing the job so far keep going. And I don't think the curse has totally sunk them yet.
We move to the St. Paul Saints, 4-5 right now, right fourth in the American Association. We're seeing pretty good pitching out of St. Paul at this point. At times, they've had some really good pitching, and the ERA is fifth in the league at 5.13. We've seen some excellent starts. Ryan Zimmerman had a great start yesterday in Milwaukee. The hitting is obviously there. It's the surprise people. I want to kind of talk about the good things at the moment. It's some names that you and I weren't really looking at to start the season. A Chris Kinnea, I believe is the way you say that. It's these guys that I think are kind of keeping St. Paul moving along right now, and I think that's boding well for when other guys that we expect to see big numbers out start to come around.
You know, there's no amusement park in Sioux Falls if you want to see a roller coaster. Come watch the St. Paul Saints play at the Birdcage, because it's been wow. You know, they either put up 11 runs or they got a game the day before when they only get 3 hits and save the pitch. And one day it looks excellent, and next day they give up 12. I don't know what you're going to get from this team right now. It's you know, I'll say one thing, they're not boring, but it's got to be a little frustrating for George Sammons. I'm sure he'd like to see a little more consistent play from his batters and his pitchers. And the fielding, too. The fielding has been an issue. I thought there were some plays that fielders should have made in Milwaukee that were awarded as hits. So I think if they catch the ball consistently, which, you know, Sammons values guys that can get the job done in the field, too. I mean, there was a stretch on Saturday. 2 consecutive plays, Justin Bird drops a fly ball in center field, and next play, Troy Alexander drops the ball in right field. I mean, how often do you see that on any level of professional baseball? So, yeah, it's just, you know, the Saints, with the roster they got, they got to have all parts of their game clicking if they're going to win. And, yeah, it's not a great start for them, but it's not bad either. They're at 4-5. They're still in the mix.
You know, for me personally, I agree with you that the defense has been a serious problem for this team so far. I think it's the game 3 loss in Sioux Falls to start the season was all defense. You know, the team lost because of their defense on that. And I looked at the other thing I think is I'm trying to, you know, if I'm looking at what is a challenge, I guess, for the Saints at this point, is a lot of guys that I expected to be doing certain roles with the team are not in those roles at all. You know, Tanner Keast, I was looking to be the closer, and Mike Devine was the setup guy, and Max Murphy was the leadoff guy for this team. Now he's back in that spot, but he was hitting 9th for a few games to start out the season. I guess it's, for manager George Samus, maybe at this point it's just trying to figure out exactly where he's putting guys to get this role, you know, to kind of mesh this team right, and it's going to take a couple of weeks for that to happen.
Well, I think you're going to see Keast as your 8th inning guy, because Jameson Green has been lights out in the games that he's came in to close. And he had an incredible season in the Atlantic League last year, so it's not a fluke. So Samus is just kind of going with the guy that's had more experience as a closer right now, because you look at Keast, he was really only a closer for 1 month of the season last year. So it was new territory. I mean, he did a fine job, but he's still relatively inexperienced in that role. And McGrain was just phenomenal for an entire season for, I believe, the York Revolution last year. But boy, you know, you get Keaston McGrain, you get that lead to the 8th inning, and I like their chances. Jose Velez, he's thrown really good the last couple times out too, and I think he's filling the spot that the Saints were looking to fill when Ken Frost didn't come back. So,
after a tough first appearance of the season, Velez has been lights out ever since. So that's a good sign. And they haven't even got to Matt Poverenko yet. So if he's ready to go in a 2 or 3 weeks, that bullpen is going to really be something.
Also, Mike Devine also expressed an interest in starting. That may be why he's in the rotation right now. He did start in like 2016,
and he looked pretty good. Can't fault the spot out there for him.
Right.
Well, let's move to the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, who start out the season by going 4-2 against Fargo and then had a little step back in Sioux Falls. Now 5-4, third in the American Association. Pitching's looking great. Mitch Lamson was awesome in his two starts, but kind of iffy for Kevin McGovern. Kevin Hilton looked good. And pretty much, I guess, what we expected from the pitching staff.
Right. You got to wonder about McGovern because he was sliding last year. I know we were talking about how we expected him to bounce back and hasn't gone well for him so far, where he did actually pick up an inning out of the bullpen for them in kind of mop-up duty last night. But, you know, he's been in this league too long to stay down, so hope to see a turnaround from him. But, yeah, Lamson and Kevin Hilton have been excellent, and, you know, he's not closing games for them, but don't sit on this Kent. Oh, it's Hassler or Hassler?
Hassler, yeah, I think Hassler, yeah.
Yeah, 11 strikeouts in 6 innings, 2 walks, only 1 hit. That's pretty good stuff if you're not in a rotation or if you're not in the bullpen, it doesn't have Victor. Okay.
Very true. The hitting has been unbelievable for Winnipeg. They are far ahead of the rest of the teams in terms of league batting average, but a guy I just wanted to kind of highlight at this point who easily could have been the player of the week this week as well is Logan Hill. 12 runs scored in 9 games, 16 hits out of 40 at bats. This guy's the real deal.
Didn't they have someone last year named Hill too?
I think Tyler Hill, wasn't that right? Yeah, that it got picked up.
Hey, if you're a free agent and your last name is Hill, you're looking at resurrecting your career, give Rick Forney a call.
Yeah, I think he was at like 390 when he got signed by Arizona, if I remember correctly. And this Logan Hill, I have to say that was kind of a thought that hit me. A Hill in the outfield in Winnipeg is sure a winning ticket right now.
Yeah, you check out the archives of our show last year. I think I was bragging up Ben Hill about a month before he finally got signed.
Well, he has looked really good. So, the hitting is obviously there. They can keep that pitching staff and get they had a couple of rough outings from, McGovern. I want to say Brown, but that's not right. That's the other, the big time starter that had a great start in the first game of the season and then kind of struggled in the last. See, I'm going to have to look this up, Kevin. My apologies for not having this information like I should have. So that's bad preparation, Kevin, by me. Right there, boy.
Well, while you're looking that up, I have to mention Kyle Martin. He's picked up right where he left off last year after a strong second half. In 342, 3 bombs, 11 runs, batted in. I know we were giving him consideration for player of the week until Tom Shea got things going.
Yeah, because he had he had those first couple of games, he had the two homers, and then the homer the next night. I don't think he's hit a home run since then. Is that true? Yeah, that's true. But, the RBI has not, consistently stayed like he... Yeah, I wasn't expecting him to have 9 RBIs after every 2-game stretch. But he just got off to such a great start and has been such a guy that they can count on the lineup. He's helping to make that lineup even more potent, so I agree with you. Frank Duncan was the guy I was trying to think of that had the great start in the first outing, struggled in his last outing there. So for Winnipeg, I'm believing, 7.45 ERA for Duncan through 2 starts, 14.29 for McGovern through 3 appearances, 2 of those are starts. This is the key to that team right there. If the 3 and 4 guys can back up Lamson and Hilton, then that's a playoff team.
Great, as I predicted.
Yes, you did too. So Kevin is a half game out of the playoff prediction right now. So I wanted to give him a little pat on the back there. The Milwaukee Milkmen, second place in the American Association right now at 5-3. Team put together a nice win streak there. I think four in a row that they had there, which I believe is a club record, tied the club record from last season. So congratulations to them. They're doing everything right now, Kevin, because the team batting average is still a little low at the point at 245, but they're getting great pitching and playing good defense, and this is a team that is ready to make a splash, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they won some real tight games in Chicago, too, so I think that's going down there, winning games on the road and winning them in extra inning fashion or late in the game, that just shows you how much character this club has.
Well, I got to say, sweeping Chicago in Chicago was a big statement as far as I was concerned. And right, I don't know if you were kind of looking that same way, but I thought that was huge.
Yeah. Thanks for an early statement. As many times those two teams are going to play each other, I think that's key to make the early statement that, hey, we're not going to roll over for you.
I think what's impressive about them is that we haven't even seen big batting averages yet out of Zach Naryer. And Chase Simpson, as Tom pointed out, has been out for a week now. And so we haven't even seen the heart of that team really start to produce. David Washington hasn't put up big numbers yet. I think Dylan Tice is the only guy on the team who's really putting up numbers, and with the exception of Logan Trowbridge. But of the big guys that we were expecting numbers out of, we haven't seen that yet. So this is a team that really has a lot of if we get just normal numbers out of guys here, this is a team that has a big time upside.
Right. Yeah. Well, like I said, they're going to have to establish some sort of dominance over their hub mate with the Chicago Dogs. I know they're not playing in the same park, but still consider them hub mates.
Well, yeah, they still have the hub bait. You're right there. And we'll talk about the American Association leading Sioux Falls Canaries. That's exciting news there in Sioux Falls, Kevin.
The Fu Man crew? Oh, that's right. Damn, Mike does want to do the Fu Man too. Oh, yeah, it was, after dropping 2 out of 3 to the St. Paul's at the year, the three-game sweep, I was, big momentum builder, and then you take care of business in your own park again. One pick over the weekend, and puts you in first place.
5-game
win. So Rob jinxes you.
Yeah, I don't want to jinx him. Yeah, we don't want anything like that. I have to say, Kevin, but you know, sweeping St. Paul, that was obviously a huge deal. I thought taking 2 out of 3 from Winnipeg was huge because Winnipeg looked like just a machine when they came to Sioux Falls, the way that they just handled Fargo. And I thought, wow, this is going to be a real time to see if, you know, Sioux Falls, I think at that point was 4-2. And I thought, okay, well, you know, they caught St. Paul just trying to figure things out right now. We'll see what they look like here against the Goldeyes. And then they just handled business.
Yeah, maybe they had a flat tire that the Winnipeg team bus had on the way down from Fargo before bolting on Friday.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Poor Steve Schuster. So, yeah, that had to be quite a mishap for the team there. And so, I think did he drive down there and had a little problem too? Is that what I remember seeing?
He had a fender bender up in Fargo earlier in the season too.
That's it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then he was like doing his thing he does online with throwing like a weighted ball and working on some mechanic stuff, throwing. And I was trying to figure out where he might have been at, but apparently like some guy from the team out and told me he had to stop, and it's not been the most memorable summer off the field for Steve so far, I'm sure. So
not a good way.
But it can only get better.
Yeah, that's right. Not a good way has it been memorable for him, that's for sure. Well, Kevin, we are at the second day off here in the American Association. Big surprises for you at this point?
Well, I'm surprised to see Sioux Falls have it together and being at the top of the standings. But shouldn't be too surprised. But yeah, other than that, I guess I'm not really too shocked by anything.
Are we having Kevin Lucco power rankings yet, or are we going to wait a while on that?
I just don't know how it's going to go with the 16 league. Maybe when we get to like the 20 game spot or after like 3 weeks, I can dabble with it. A big part was how you did in your last 10 games. Well, they haven't even played 10 games yet, so.
Good point.
I like to do the overall record and then factor in what they did in their last 10. So might not be until we get to the halfway part of the year.
That's an excellent point to come in, I think, right there, too. What's going on out there at the 10th inning stretch, Kevin?
Well, I made up for lost time by spending most of the week on the road following the St. Paul Saints. A couple games in Sioux Falls, and then my first night home where I just followed everything on American Association TV. Then I took in the weekend series of Milwaukee, so I got my... wrote a blog last night talking about my travels out there and talking about stuff that went on and off the field.
That's a great thing to have out going out there. So fans, go out there and check that out, 10th Inning Stretch, which you can follow out there from Minor League Sports Report. We always like to promote Kevin because Kevin is doing good stuff out there promoting the league. So check out a good articles that he's got going on. Minor League Sports Report, we're just following the action that's happening right there. Chris Coast show is underway there. You can check out Coastlines to see what Chris has got going on. We're still staying with Mike Meyer, and of course Kevin and I will be with you each week with our keeping a special guest, which next week we have a great guest that Kevin's got on for us. So I'm not going to say who that is right now, but come check it out next week because I'm sure you will enjoy listening to her. Yeah, see, that's a good clue for you right there. So awesome. Kevin, having a good final thought for us today.
I spent Saturday night listening to Jack Michaels call the Fargo-Chicago game. And Coach Ryan is a nice name for the show, but I think they trumped you. They called the pregame show Coastiff Notes.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, that's a good one. I like that. Man, that's a man. Well, okay, well, he already has the best name, so. I'll be second best. I'll stick with that. Good for him. Kevin, good final thought. I know you got a great one for us.
Well, I was thinking about this about driving home from Milwaukee last night, enjoying a delicious root beer shake from Gilly's Frozen Custard. We're only 9 games into the season, but we're already at the point of the year where the sun's going to start setting earlier. Every day, and as young as this season is, it's gonna get laid awfully quick. So, get out to the ballpark, support your team, enjoy the summer while it's still here, and enjoy some American Association baseball because I think it's gonna be a fabulous season.
I couldn't agree more with that, Kevin. Well, we want to thank you for joining us this week. We want to again thank Tom Wynn for joining us, and look forward to having him on the show again. For Kevin Lucco, I am Rob Panier. We will see you next time on This Week in the Association.